From the studios of WMUB Oxford, this is WMUB Forum. I'm John Hingsbergen, inviting you to join in as we welcome our guests and as we encourage you to be part of today's discussion. In June, the Senate Judiciary Committee held hearings about the use of signing statements by the Bush administration. Testimony relayed concern among legislators, scholars, and legal experts that the practice has gone too far in expanding presidential powers. Committee Chairman Arlen Specter introduced legislation that would allow Congress to sue the president over his authority to enforce statements that he adds to laws he has signed. We're going to encourage you to join our conversation as we talk about presidential signing statements and separation of powers today. Your questions and comments are welcome throughout the program, and we will invite you to send an email to forum@wmub.org or call in. And we'll get to phones in a few minutes after we introduce our guests and get into the topic. The phone number, though, is 888-877-3885. If you get on the line, be prepared to wait a few minutes, and then we'll get you on the air with your questions, your comments, or your personal stories. Again, that's 888-877-3885, the email forum@wmub.org. On today's program, we welcome to WMEB Studio F Dr. Christopher Kelly. Chris Kelly is a visiting assistant professor of political science at Miami University. He is one of few scholars researching presidential signing statements. Kelly edited a recently released collection of essays about the changing nature of presidential power titled Executing the Constitution, and he also maintains his own blog called Media Watch. We're going to want to hear about that blog and how people can access that.
Sure.
Welcome, Chris Kelly.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back on the program. I know you've been here in the past. Also joining us is Bruce Fine. Bruce is a member of the American Bar Association Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements, and he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee on the issue. He's a constitutional lawyer and an international consultant with the Litchfield Group in Washington, D.C. He also writes a weekly column on legal and international affairs for the Washington Times. And Bruce Fine joins us from Washington. Good morning and welcome to WMEB Forum.
Well, thank you. Honored to be with you.
Thank you so much. During this hour, again, you, our listener, are invited to join our conversation with your questions, comments, and personal stories about the topic. You can reach us by email at forum@wmub.org, that phone number 888-877-3885. And what we toss out to you, our listeners, is a number of possible areas for you to consider. Are you even aware of this concept of signing statements? Are you concerned that they may be giving the chief executive too much power? If you've never heard of signing statements before our conversation, tell us what you think as you learn about them today. And if you are familiar with this concept of presidential signing statements, do you believe they are an appropriate use of executive powers? Let's start off with Chris Kelly, the basic question of the day. What is a signing statement? Is there a difference between a signing statement and a veto or a line item veto?
There is. The signing statement itself is, as the name suggests, nothing more than a document that the president attaches to a bill that he's just signed into law. And the document itself will explain what the bill does, who worked on the particular piece of legislation, and then what the president thinks about the particular piece of legislation. Generally speaking, most of the signing statements are non-controversial. They are more where a president will congratulate members who worked on the bill with him. Sometimes he'll hold a formal signing ceremony to go along with the signing statement itself. The more controversial signing statements, though, the ones that have brought us here today, occur when the president either interprets vague provisions of the legislation in a way that contradicts perhaps the way Congress had intended the language to be interpreted. And also a president will construct the provisions that he feel are defective in a way that he makes them constitutional. Basically what he says is that he'll find a provision of the bill to be defective in some way, and his understanding of the Constitution then is what he follows up with that statement, and it's that particular use of the signing statement that has really drawn most of the attention to the Bush administration today, simply because he has challenged so many pieces, provisions of bills that he signed into law.
For instance, give us an example of a signing statement that is currently controversial.
Well, there's the signing statement which occurred right around New Year's, 2005-2006, when President Bush signed into law an emergency supplemental. Part of that supplemental contained the provision with respect to how the United States would treat detainees. This was the provision where Senator McCain had lobbied throughout the fall of 2005 to make sure that we didn't mistreat enemy detainees, and the administration pushed hard to carve out exceptions to that provision. When they failed to do so, President Bush had sort of a formal photo op with Senator McCain and Senator John Warner, in which he agreed that McCain's interpretation was the correct interpretation. But when he signed the provision into law, his signing statement construed that in a way that took back the concessions that he had made made with Senator McCain and Senator Warner on the bill.
How can that be? I mean, everything, the basis of law, and even those of us without any background in law at all know that what's on paper is what counts. The Congress, the House, the right. Senate negotiate these bills. They get them through and agree on the language, and it's clear in black mm-hmm. and white, literally, what the law is supposed to mean. How can the presidential opinion change the way a law is going to be implemented?
Well, this is what also sort of has turned on the head our understanding of the legislative process. We all remember what we were taught with respect to the legislative process. The Congress gets to draft the bills. The president either signs or vetoes the bills, and then the courts interpret the meaning if there's a challenge. Basically, what we've seen over the past 25 years or so is that there's been this novel approach to executive power, where presidents have asserted the right to independently interpret the meaning of the Constitution and the language of law. Essentially, a president says that I take an oath to protect both the office of the presidency and the Constitution. Therefore, I cannot, in keeping with my oath, I cannot enforce provisions of a bill that I determine to be constitutional. Therefore, I will have to construct those provisions in a way that satisfy my interpretation of the Constitution.
Let's draw in Bruce Fine with the Washington Times, columnist for the Washington Times, an international consultant with the Litchfield Group in Washington, D.C., attorney working with the American Bar Association on their discussion of signing statements. Bruce, is the signing statement essentially encroaching on the authority of both the legislature that is making the laws and on the courts who are appointed to interpret the laws?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background here for the audience. The founding fathers understood how to balance the powers of the president with the powers of the legislature in the making of legislation. The president does have a role because he can sign or veto laws. And the Constitution in Article 1, Section 7, Clause 2 gives the president two options, only two options when the House and Senate have passed the bill. It says he can sign the bill, and then he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and enforce it, or he can veto the bill and return it to the House in which it originated with a statement of his objections. And the Founding Fathers envisioned that the president would view bills that he thought were unconstitutional as prime targets for the veto. The Founding Fathers knew that the legislature might encroach on the president, just like it could happen in an opposite direction, and the veto power was given as a matter of self-defense. So you can see when the president looks at a bill and says, I think this is unconstitutional, the Founding Fathers intended that he veto the bill, not sign it and then say I won't enforce it. Mm-hmm. And indeed, the very first president, George Washington, said, I either have to sign or veto a bill in toto. I can't just pick and choose amongst those. The signing statements of President Bush in unilaterally nullifying provisions of law that he has signed, they're probably well over 800 at this point, clearly violate what we call the presentment clause of the Constitution. because they are the equivalent of saying, I'm signing the bill, I approve it, I believe it's constitutional at the signing stage, and then at the enforcement stage, he says, nope, you know what, this is a null set. I won't enforce the law even though I've signed it. And if you want to look at the evils of the predecessors and kings of Great Britain that led to the decision of the Founding Fathers to require the president to execute the laws, it fits President Bush's actions like a glove. It was King James II who had dispensed or suspended the enforcement of many laws passed by the Parliament during his reign. And he was dethroned, and the British Parliament in 1688 adopted what's called the English Bill of Rights. And one of those declarations stated that a king, a royal prerogative, does not exist to suspend or dispense with laws passed by the Parliament without parliamentary consent. What President Bush is doing is simply reinstating that suspension or dispensing power, because it says, I see the law, I understand what it means, I won't enforce it.
Bruce Fine is with us on the line. We have I want to take this another step before we need to take a short break here. Gentlemen, Chris Kelly, when was signing statement first used? How did this practice come into place?
Yeah, well, there's a long precedent for the use of the signing statement, really, in all of its forms. The first documented use of the signing statement occurred in the Monroe administration in the early part of the 19th century, whereby President Monroe signed a bill that dealt with military appointments. And in the bill, in his signing statement, he basically told Congress that he has the power over appointments and not Congress. Sporadically, we saw it used throughout the 19th century. Andrew Jackson used it. But for the most part, it's been a 20th century sort of phenomena.
Okay, we're going to come back to this concept of presidential signing statements, your opinion, your input, your reflections or stories about this issue. Are welcome. Forum at WMUB.org is our email address. Call us at 888-877-3885 or in the Cincinnati area, 529-5200.